Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's a big season for the Two-Tone Blue.
We won't let the past do the talking.
It's time to break it all down with Chase McCabe and ESPN's Teron Davenport. This is Chase and TD.
It's time to go eat, baby.
On Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Just because the Titans are on a bye week doesn't mean that we are. Chase and TD live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe alongside ESPN's Teron Davenport. Calvin Smith behind the glass. Calvin A. Smith, not Stephen A. Smith. Calvin A. Smith behind the glass hanging out. And Teron, I'm going to be honest with you. When we wrapped up the show last week, we both were kind of like, okay, you know, listen, Kansas City, Pat Mahomes coming back, probably not going to look too good by the Titans. I don't trust, you know, I was one of those. I was like, I don't trust him to do it right. I don't trust the game plan. I think they'll abandon the run. And I was wrong. We were wrong. They won. It was a exciting game. It came down to the wire. It came down to a lot of crazy things. Josh Kalu with the block kick. The Tennessee Titans are victorious over the Chiefs going to the bye week at 5-5.
Yeah, and I tell you what, I don't want to say I knew, but I expected them to run the football. Just kind of talking to Derrick Henry early in that week also. And then in addition to just, it was just one of those things where it's like, okay, you got to learn at some point. Like Kevin Hart said, you're going to learn today. And that's basically what happened. They learned on Sunday against the Panthers that they needed to give the ball to 22. They did it, and look what happened. They won the game. Obviously, there was more to it than just Derrick Henry, but 188 yards rushing, two touchdowns is nothing to sneeze at. A 68-yard touchdown, which was his first run of 40 yards or more. As a result, you saw that average per carry stretch out a little bit. Derrick Henry is that guy.
Yeah.
He's the one that they have to focus on.
Hey, I got to give some props to my dude Ryan Tannehill, though. I mean, he was able to run when he needed to. Three carries, 37 yards, so had that 18-yard run in the win over the Chiefs. But look, my whole thing was I just felt like this coaching staff was at a point where they know what they should do, and then they don't. They never know when to parachute out, and they never know when to stick with it. And they proved me wrong. Now my thing is do it again. Like, your game plan that you had against the Kansas City Chiefs, that worked perfectly. Well, not perfectly, but it worked. So you do stuff like that again, and I think this team could make a run at it. It just, can they replicate that? It's going to be big coming up. You know, we talked to Logan Ryan earlier today on Darren Donick and Chase, and, you know, his whole thing was the bye week came at a perfect time. It was a tough game against Kansas City. They got a lot of banged up guys, can get some of them back coming off the bye week. So I think, you know, with six games left, this is exactly where you wanted the bye, and you know, you like what you have seen out of them over the course of really the last few games outside of Carolina, but they're 3-1 since Tannehill took over.
Well, here's the thing, right? I get it. You definitely want to duplicate that. But not every team you face is going to be 29th in the league.
No, no.
You know, in rushing defense. So my thing is you need to have a plan even after you get that punch in the mouth. And I think that's something that they could have. But the key to that is going to be establishing other players. And we'll get into that a little bit later because I want to look at some of the things that have to happen for this team to go on a hot streak, right, and ride that wave into the playoffs. But at the same time, Ryan Tannehill, you mentioned him. I tell you what, I have to tip my cap to Ryan Tannehill because you know what? That final drive, he did everything necessary, every single thing necessary. And here's the thing. He could have put his tail between his legs and folded when that pocket collapsed around him. But what did he do? He managed to step up, find a crease, took off for 18 yards. I'm telling you, man, I will say it over and over and over again. That run that he had set the tone for that whole drive.
Yep.
It set the tone for that whole drive. And the next thing you know, man, listen, Anthony Firkser, let me tell you this. He probably has the best hands on the team. I feel his catching ability is better than Adam Humphries, and that's not a slight on Adam Humphries because you know I love the slot machine. You know what I mean? But I think his hands are the best on the team. That diving catch that he had for the touchdown, but then even just it was a routine catch that he made on that drive, but his ability to somehow get open despite not being very athletic, right? Not being very fast, not being very big, not being very strong. He just knows how to get open. But then on top of that, that Adam Humphries catch for the touchdown.
That was huge too.
That was beyond huge.
Now, Teron, I have to take a moment in the show, and the moment that this play happened in the game, I made a mental note that I was going to do this week. Calvin Smith has been the biggest fan of Khalif Raymond since training camp.
Mm-hmm.
Take your moment, Calvin.
I'm very happy about that one, and just because of a dimension he adds to the offense, right? He's not an every down receiver, but that's something that's very fun to have on the team that is now kind of out there and in their back pocket when they want to use it later. And I think that really could help them out in a lot of different ways in the passing game, especially last game they were without Corey Davis. I think that affected how they wanted to throw the ball a little bit in the game plan that week.
His ability to track the football is underrated. And I'll admit I underrated it, but after seeing the way he tracked that ball in that sun to make that catch on that post, outstanding job. But the thing, to Calvin's point, the dimension that he adds, the whole reason why, yeah, Humphries, his catch was great. That throw by Tannehill, on the money, on time. That safety is not out of the way unless Khalif Raymond explodes off the ball. Go back and watch the tape. He exploded off the ball. He got vertical. He put that DB in trail position, and Tyrann Mathieu had to go over there. He opened that whole play up.
And I'll give him credit, too, even though they did rule him down, that it wasn't a touchdown. I do like the hustle of, if you don't hear a whistle, then you keep playing. And he jumped back up, ran into the end zone, and then they go back and look at it. So I like that awareness by Khalif
Raymond. He's the example of what I say, or what I mean when I say a player going out there hungry to the point where his ribs are showing. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
And I love that analogy by you. I think that's perfect for
and
him.
And that's how he takes advantage of every opportunity. So outstanding job by Khalif Raymond.
Yeah, and once again, you see Ryan Tannehill spreading the ball around through the air. Now, only 181 yards passing because of Derrick Henry's performance, which that's perfect. That's fine. But you saw a balance. You saw 19 pass attempts, 26 carries overall. So while it leaned towards the run, as it should against that rushing defense, still had to go to the passing game. I think the offense continues to get better and on schedule, as you like to say, with Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, no doubt about it. They get better. And you know what? We went through 10 or almost 10 minutes of this, and we didn't even mention the 10 for 10. See, 10 is a magic number.
Mm-hmm.
The 10 for 10 on red zone.
Yep.
This team, Ryan Tannehill took over that offense. They were 19th in red zone touchdown scoring percentage. They're number one.
Yeah.
They are number one, 72%. He increased them almost 20%.
I love his swagger, too. I've been around him a couple times now, and like you can just tell that confidence is back.
Yeah.
It's what I think could happen to Marcus Mariota wherever he ends up going. It's just that you're rejuvenated. You had to sit, take a step back, take a look at yourself. Okay, what can I do better? And now Ryan Tannehill has gotten a second chance. And, you know, one thing we talked about on the show this week, Teron, is, and you were here on Monday, of, you know, is he playing his way into another contract to be, you know, whether it's a stopgap or still be on this team? I think right now he's your best option at starter for 2020, you know, barring anything crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But the way this team has played, I mean, they're 3-1 since he took over. They're probably on pace for 8-8, 9-7 again. Who knows what that means for the playoffs? But they're still in the division race.
Yeah, he's definitely played himself into consideration as a bridge guy. However, this is Ryan Tannehill, right? And I know he's looking good right now, and I'm right there with you. He is looking really good right now. But this is the same guy that the Dolphins gave millions of dollars to get away.
I know.
And my thing is, can that opportunity that he had taken from him and getting the boot the way he did from Miami, can that make him turn around? Because he has all the ability in the world. The main thing with him was he was scary. But I'm telling you, and watching him, I'm not seeing that scary dude anymore. And that's the thing that's so interesting. I know John Robinson and the Titans brass, they have to be seeing that too, because the fact of the matter is this dude in clutch situations is stepping up. Three game-winning drives, is it? You know what I mean? He's putting it together for this team, and he's delivering the ball on the money when it needs to. And then that little truck stick, he used the truck stick on Juan Thornhill to get the two-point conversion, flexed on him afterwards. I mean,
that was a good play call, too.
Yeah, excellent play call. And that's the thing, right? When you have a guy like Tannehill, and they had it in Mariota, too. They just didn't call it enough.
Yeah.
You could run that read option. You know what I mean? You could run that quarterback sweep. You could do those things, so that's an added dimension in the red zone.
Hats off to the defense, too. They continue to make big plays. 32 points. You knew this was going to be a high-scoring affair if you wanted to stay in this game. That's just how Kansas City is. Yeah. You're not going to be able to completely take them out of the game. But you had Rashawn Evans with the scoop and score. And, you know, David Long caused that fumble. I mean, he made that play happen. I know on TV they were saying Austin Johnson and then Rashawn Evans. No, it was David Long that made that play happen.
Yeah, and I love, again, it goes back to what we're saying. You have to stay ready so you don't have to get ready. When he was called upon in the limited snaps that he had an impact. And that forced fumble is an example. David Long quietly, everybody knocks that conference, the Big 12 conference, right?
Yep.
Everybody knocks that conference, but I'm telling you, when it comes to linebackers, safeties, it's awesome for those guys. And I talked to David Long about this back in training camp. You're prepared to play in space, and you're able to do it consistently against those wide-open offenses, you know, West Virginia, Texas Tech, Oklahoma, all those offenses, those spread looks. You're consistently forced to play in space, so going to the next level and doing it, it's, I don't want to say easy, but it's business as usual. He's showing that. Outstanding play by him. And then Rashawn Evans, the scoop and score. Look, man, everyone wants to knock John Robinson for his drafts. You look at what he has produced from last year's draft. I mean, Harold Landry, 7 sacks, on his way to double digit. Rashawn Evans balling like crazy. David Long, a 5th-round pick. Imani Hooker, a 5th-round pick.
Yep.
Getting consistent time.
Yep.
Oh, by the way, they got some guy named A.J. Brown in the 2nd round already contributing. And as a leader, you saw the way he went up to Taylor Lewan. And then, oh, can't forget the big fella, right, Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah, and look.
Outstanding.
I've been pretty complimentary of his drafts.
Yeah.
Free agent signing, okay. But, but his drafts have been pretty good for the Tennessee Titans. So, by the way, I think I may have started something.
So
we had Rashawn Evans on with us on Monday, and as we closed out, I said, hey, I'm watching the game. I didn't go. I watched it on TV, and they show the clip of Mike Vrabel scoring a touchdown in the Super Bowl against Andy Reid and the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize that he had 11 touchdown catches in his career.
Yeah.
And I said, Rashawn, he played linebacker. You're a linebacker. You've told us that you got hands and you played both sides of the ball. I think you need to go to your head coach and say, Coach, you know, give me a shot. Put me in on offense. And he goes, you triggered something. I think I'm going to have to go have that conversation with him. So I'm curious if Rashawn Evans and Mike Vrabel will have that chat. But he's got that ability. He's got the hands. And, you know, as this offense gets a little more dynamic, that could be something to see.
If any defensive player gets a shot on offense, got to be 2-5, man.
Well, and they've done that. They did that with the previous coaching staff.
Yeah,
but.
I get it, though. Rashawn would be nice to you. Put him at fullback. Oh, you know what you do? You get Rashawn to wear that cowboy collar, give you flashbacks of Moose Johnson at fullback, a couple leads, and there you go, play action, and he just runs that circle route, pop pass, bloop.
There you
touchdown.
Go.
Touchdown.
6. That's how it is. All right, so they're 5-5 right now. 3 things that need to happen for the Titans to get hot down the stretch. Teron will give those to us. When we come back, it's Chase and TD, ESPN 1025 The Game. We're back. Chase and TD, ESPN 1025 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport, Calvin Smith hanging out with you. Joel Corey from CBS, former agent, he's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. A lot of contracts to get into with the Tennessee Titans, and with it being the bye week, we thought it'd be a good time to do that. But as the Titans head down the stretch. After the bye week, there are six games left. And as we said in the opening segment, perfect time for the bye to heal up, to take a week off, to just get your mind right for that stretch run. Three things we need to see happen for the Titans to get hot down the stretch and ultimately make the playoffs, because that was the hope going in to this season. And I still harken back to when you make a coaching change after winning a playoff game, the next staff has to get there. Yeah. I mean, they have to do it too. So three straight years of 9-7. And honestly, this team right now looks like an 8-8, 9-7 team. But how can they maybe do a little bit more as they have, by my count, four division games left to try and win the division and make the playoffs or get the wild card?
Yeah, well, for me, I wanted to do three things because there are three things, in my opinion, that need to happen. And first off, defensively, they just have to – because the whole formula for Mike Vrabel, complementary football, what does that mean? Not turning the football over, creating turnovers. So you combine that into one statement, being plus in the turnover column, and then just keeping teams from scoring and running the football or having that physical mentality. So we're going to look at the turnover part of it first. And for me, I really think it is imperative for this defense to continue to create turnovers. This offense is very opportunistic, right? You've seen multiple times they've gotten turnovers for the offense, and what do? Since Tannehill took over, they cashed in. No more getting the ball on your side of the 50 and or on the opponent's side of the 50-yard line and not scoring. They are scoring points. So, for me, they have to continue to turn the football over. And there are multiple ways that has to happen. First off, LeSean Sims has to step up in Butler's presence. I'm not saying become an interception machine. What I am saying is be better in coverage. I think he played solid against the Chiefs. I think along with that, Adoree Jackson has to time his jumps better. He came oh so close on a couple of opportunities to pick the ball off. He has to intercept those balls.
Would you have taken a look at Vernon Hargraves?
Oh, that's a good question.
The Texans claimed him off waivers.
I probably would have taken a look at Hargraves. He was my number one. He was my number two corner. My number one that year was Mackenzie Alexander out of Clemson. But probably something I would have considered. But that being said, I think Jayon Brown has to come back healthy. He has to continue to do what he's doing as far as – he just seems to be Johnny on the spot, right? There's so many times where he tips the ball in the air. Those tips that he makes have to become interceptions. Someone has to get to the football and catch it. It happened twice. He tipped one. Rashawn Evans couldn't catch it. The season opener, Adoree Jackson had to hit him right in the 2 and the 5. Can't happen. And then we'll go to the front line. And for me, Jarrell Casey coming back healthy, he – along with Daquan Jones and especially Jeffrey Simmons, they have to get that inside push and force errant throws.
I want to see all three of them together.
Yeah, and we've seen it at times, but I think it's something that we need to see more consistently. So,
that's, especially now that Jeffrey's getting acclimated.
Of course. So for me, that is what has to happen defensively.
Let me say this too, because you'll be. I admitted this on the air. I said Teron's gonna be mad at me for not knowing this. So we did a segment the other day where Darren had like the grades for the Titans so far and who was graded the best, you know, through the season. And Daquan Jones. I didn't know that. I should have known that. You know, and
every show
to you,
we get on here, I talk about him.
Yep.
It's not showing up in the stat sheet, but there are just things that he does running down a screen. Mm-hmm. You have a running pass going to the opposite gap, a running play going to the opposite gap. He's running it down 4 yards down the field. That's impressive. Standing in the middle of that offensive line, occupying two gaps so Rashawn or Vaccaro or Byard could come in and make the tackle. Those things are definitely imperative. Logan Ryan, too. Let me tell you this. Logan Ryan is the MVP of that defense.
Absolutely.
He's second on the team in tackles. Second on the team, a DB, second on the team in sacks, and tied for first with Byard for interceptions. Oh, by the way, week in and week out, who does he get? Slot receivers, or he gets one of the better receivers when they're in base and he has to line up on the outside. And he has to be a key in run support. Logan, he's the MVP of the defense.
Yep.
I'm not even going to have that conversation. But getting back on track with the keys, that the things that need to happen, we're going to move on to Derrick Henry. I'm not going to say much about it. You guys know, you know how I feel about Derrick Henry and his role, what his involvement should be. I'll say this, a minimum of 15 carries per game. He should have a minimum of 20 touches per game. So sometimes it could be 23 carries like it was against the yep. Chiefs. Other times it could be 16 carries and 4 catches. He is improving as a receiver out the backfield. Is he a guy that is efficient? Not really. But there are things that you could do to highlight him as a pass catcher. The screen
passes.
Completely
agree.
He's deadly on the screen. The Titans are actually, believe it or not, one of the top three screen teams in the league. The Tennessee Titans.
Yeah. Well, because he's gotten better at that. That was something he struggled with earlier in his career because he didn't do it in college. It was all – but I think the screens and the toss sweeps have been very effective with him, and that's something that I want to see more of too.
Anything getting him in that alley, into that space, it's an advantage for the Titans. So I won't get too much on the Derrick Henry tangent. I ended with this. Last 15 times he's touched the ball, had 15 or more carries, they're 10-5.
Yeah.
The thing I want to wrap up on is the Tannehill to Adam Humphreys connection. And it confuses me. For the life of me, I cannot understand why it's so Jekyll and Hyde for Adam Humphreys in the last four quarterbacks that he's had. His production came for the most part when Jameis Winston was the quarterback. Ryan Fitzpatrick's in there. DeSean Jackson's production goes up. Mm-hmm. Humphreys, it goes down. This year, we know what happened in the first four games, right? He was a bona fide blocker / occasional pass catcher. But even beyond that, his production still wasn't there. Ryan Tannehill takes over, 12 receptions on 15 targets. Chase, that is 80%. Mm-hmm. So you mean to tell me you throw the ball to the slot machine 10 times, he's catching 8 of them?
I think that's pretty good.
That's what I call efficiency.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. It goes back to what I was saying in the previous segment about Tannehill. I use the scary word about Tannehill. Safe, scary type of quarterbacks, which I'm not sure Tannehill is that still, but he's going to revert back to tendencies. And what does that translate to for the Titans? Working between the hashes. Who right now is their best option between the hashes? Adam Humphreys.
Yep.
When the stuff hits the fan, who are they checking to on the hot calls? Adam Humphreys. He has to be extra involved, especially on third downs, and he has to be a consistent target for Ryan Tannehill. Otherwise, this thing isn't going to work.
I agree.
That's it.
I agree. I can't push back on any of those three. The one that I will add, and I know this is low-hanging fruit, but I think it's important, the coaching staff has to be consistent. And by coaching staff, I mean the head coach and the offensive coordinator. Now, with Ryan Tannehill, I feel like even though the reason that a lot of us liked Arthur Smith and that choice was because of familiarity with Marcus Mariota, I think something has clicked much more with him and Ryan Tannehill. I don't know if it's just style or whatever it is. There's just something that has worked where you're starting to see a little more diversity in play calling, and Ryan Tannehill is able to execute that a little bit better than Mariota was.
You know the thing? I'm not necessarily going to say there's more diversity in play calling. I think there's more effectiveness from the play calls. Look,
that may be a better way to put it. Yeah.
Arthur Smith can only design the play and call it at the right time. If he does those two things and is not executed, that's not on Arthur Smith. But let's be honest. There have been consistent times. Marcus Mariota he's a great dude. Great dude. Cool in the locker room. I'm sure, you know, the guys on the team love him. But let's face the facts. He has not been effectively operating that offense. And that's why he was pulled.
Yep.
I get it. They played against the Bills. I get it. They played against the Colts, the Jaguars. But the fact of the matter is he was not effective in those losses. There have been multiple guys open. If you go back and watch the All-22, guys are open. They're running free.
I remember that one of Corey Davis being like, dude, why aren't you throwing it to me?
Yeah. So it's there. So for me, when I look at that, you're right. The coaching staff has to be consistent because, you know, Derrick Henry can't run the ball if his number isn't called. Like, he can't take the ball and run it. You know what I mean? So to that, I will say yes. But the play calls are there. The route combinations are there. Guys are getting open. It's just Tannehill is seeing
execution.
It, believing it, letting it rip.
When we come back here on Chase and TD, there are a lot of contracts that are going to be up for the Tennessee Titans and some very important ones. We'll get the thoughts of Joel Corey. He's a former agent, now with CBS Sports. We'll talk to him next. Chase and TD, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
What a professional, a questioner without doubt, superb. So full of action, my name should be a verb. My voice will flow.
We're back. Chase and TD, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
Bro.
Old school hip hop coming at you tonight. Chase and TD, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Let's say hello to Joel Corey. He's with CBS Sports, a former agent. Joel, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Now that you got Big Daddy Kane playing through there.
Oh, yeah.
As requested, you know it.
Teron was excited about that.
Yeah, well, I know a little bit about old school hip-hop.
I like it. I like it. So we wanted to have you on because the Titans going, you know, even though there are six games left in the regular season, John Robinson and the Tennessee Titans are going to have a lot of decisions to make in the offseason with their contracts with some key players on this team. I want to start with the quarterback position. As of today, November 15th, there is not a quarterback under contract beyond the season for the Tennessee Titans. I'll start with Ryan Tannehill, who has taken over as the starter. How much money do you think he's going to command, and could you see the Titans going ahead and trying to get a deal done to make him that bridge quarterback?
Yeah, well, the thing is, he's playing you guys out of being in a position to draft one in the first round, because if you're 9-7 again, you won't be in a position to pick to Joe Burrow. So you may have to bring him back as a short-term bridge quarterback. At a minimum, his representatives are going to go, you're willing to pay a quarterback almost $21 million on a one-year deal. So you should at least be willing to do that for us. I think the next six games are going to determine whether he's the guy next year. I know one guy who won't be back, the guy he replaced.
Yeah, well, that's very, very true. Marcus Mariota will move on, and you know he's making $20 million this year for him, for Mariota. But I think with Tannehill, you know, I agree with you that it's gonna probably be maybe a 1 or 2 year deal. What do you think? How long do you think it's gonna be?
That's probably about right, 1 or 2 years. But there'll be a lot of quarterback options potentially available. There's going to be more of a glut on the market for quarterbacks than there has been in the past. And there could be one very old quarterback who is available that did play with your head coach at one point in time.
Yeah, we've talked about that a time or two. The Big Tommy might want to reunite with Vrabes, buddies as they are. So, I don't know. We've definitely talked about that before.
That completely changes the game.
Oh, yeah. If he's available, if it's like, whoop, hey, okay.
Yeah, Cam Newton could be available, too, via trade. And Andy Dalton's going to need a change soon. It's more of a lateral move, if not a downgrade.
Yeah, the Cam one is interesting. I would have questions about the health coming off the shoulder surgery and then this foot. But a quarterback's best friend is what? A running game.
An offensive line and a running game. And Teddy Bridgewater. Contract will expire as well.
That's another one. There, like you said, there are going to be a gluttony of names available, valid options. Whoever comes to Nashville, I personally feel they need to be able to turn around and hand the ball off to Derrick Henry. So we know the whole idea of not paying running backs, but would you say that Derrick Henry and how he matches the Titans, would you say that's a different situation?
I'm philosophically opposed to paying any running back big money unless he has the speed of Chris Johnson, the power of Jim Brown, the elusiveness of Barry Sanders, and the pass-catching ability of Marshall Faulk, and that guy does not exist and probably never will. That being said, in this particular offense, Derrick Henry is a great fit. The problem is, do you pay a two-down running back three-down money? Because the guys who are at the top of the market all have dual-threat capabilities, Derrick Henry doesn't bring very much to the passing game.
Right.
No one's going to confuse him with Steven Jackson. Steven Jackson was a bigger running back who at one time rushed for 1,500 yards in 1 year and at the same time caught 90 balls. That's not Derrick Henry. But is there a market between that top tier, which the bottom of is $13 million, and the top of the next tier, the second tier right now, which is Devonta Freeman at $8.25 million? Maybe.
That's where I wanted to go. I'm going to throw a number out to you. Let me know what you think. Because the Freeman contract is one that I've looked at and kind of said, okay, you know what? Maybe this team could get in that framework. 4 years, $41 million, 36 guaranteed. Your thoughts?
I'm not guaranteeing that much. I probably wouldn't go more than $10 million per year. 4 year deal. First 2 years would be fully guaranteed or most of the second year. So not a big signing bonus. So you can break after 2 years. If you have to, if minimal dead money or residual cap number or cap charge, should things go south. One thing I might do if I'm the Titans, because in 2020, the last year of the CBA, you have use of a franchise tag and a transition tag. I might put a transition tag on Derrick Henry and let the market decide what his true value is, because the Titans, when it's all said and done, you have your top 51, which count in the offseason. They should have about $50 million in cap room. So that number looks like it's going to be around 8.5 to transition him. You'd still have a right to match. And since you can't put a poison pill in offer sheets anymore, it's going to be hard for any team to really put together an offer sheet that Tennessee could match it if necessary.
We're talking to Joel Corey, former agent now with CBS Sports. And another contract that I believe the Titans need to look at, and they need to re-sign this guy, has been the MVP on defense. That's Logan Ryan. He's making $10 million a year right now. I don't know if I would necessarily pay him that, but I also kind of look at it as I feel like he's a good fit here. I think he likes it here. His family likes it here. He has set some roots down, so I'm wondering if there's any type of a hometown discount he'd be willing to take. But what do you think about Logan Ryan, and how much could you see him making?
Well, you said two words I hated as an agent, hometown discount. Those words were not ever in my vocabulary unless dictated by the player. He did a three-year deal for a reason, so he could come up at 29 and presumably get another bite of the apple. Hmm. The cornerback market literally has not moved in years. The top of it has been 15, and it's still basically 15 after Xavier Howard. If you think he's a better cornerback than Malcolm Butler, then you got to pay him more than $12.25 million a year. If you just adjust his current deal for cap inflation and what the cap is going to be next year, that's going to get you to about $12 million. So maybe the $12 to $13 million per year range is right for him.
Do you do that over 3 years? What kind of
another time? Three. He did a three last time. Do another three, or you could do it. He's not going to be able to sign another big deal after this is done. So it doesn't matter to him whether it's three, four, five, or six. It shouldn't, because you're not going to pay a guy who's 32, 33, 34 big money as a corner, because
Right. Usually
you don't have corners at that age. If they have enough size, they become safeties.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. Look, when you mentioned corner to safety, I always think of Rob Woodson.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Burton Hayes, Ronnie Lott, those are other ones, you know.
Exactly.
Along those lines, let's go back to the offensive side of the ball. They have a situation at right tackle. You have Dennis Kelly, who seems to be a bargain. You have Jack Conklin, a former first-round pick. You know he's going to command money on the market, especially when you see like Lane Johnson or some of these right tackles getting this kind of money. What do the Titans do at right tackle? And if they bring Jack Conklin back, at what number?
Well, I understand why he didn't pick up the fifth-year option, because of the last 2 years, even though he was first-team All-Pro as a rookie in 2016, that would have been a shade under 13 for the fifth-year option. If you don't think there's that much of a drop-off between Dennis Kelly and Jack Conklin, then you're going to make Dennis Kelly the most likely the priority because of affordability. That right tackle market may see another jump, because I know for a fact the Eagles have been negotiating with Lane Johnson. Mm. He's already making $11.25 million per year. He's not doing an extension anywhere near that. I don't know where it would get done. But last time they made him the highest paid right tackle in football, that right now is Trent Brown, who's the highest paid tackle generally in football in 16.5. So let's say that comes in at 17. That's a new measuring stick out there. I wouldn't go above Lyle Collins for Jack Conklin, who's at $10 million per year, who's having a career year when he's on the field. Kelly wouldn't command anywhere close to that.
Right.
So if you don't – he played better than Conklin last year. Conklin, in his defense, it was an injury-plagued year. But unless you're willing to put a significant investment in Conklin, then maybe Kelly's your answer.
He's Joel Corey. He works for CBS Sports, former agent. Hey, Joel, we appreciate it as always.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Joe.
Very good stuff. And look, these are things that I'm sure John Robinson is already thinking about. I did ask Logan Ryan today if there had been any kind of conversations, and he answered it the way he should have and the way that I thought he would, and that is he's basically focused on the next six games. That's why he has an agent.
Yeah.
But I do feel like that's somebody, you know, there's going to be – you have the top three, quarterback, Derrick Henry, Logan Ryan, and look, he brought up those the franchise tag. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they tagged Henry.
I could see that. I could see him tagging Henry and then, you know, looking at what they have in front of them next year. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Meaning 2021. I don't think Henry should wear another jersey.
No, I agree.
At least for the next 2 years.
I did and again, this is all just guesswork at this point, but I looked at Spotrac.com and, you know, you can look at market value. And they have him, you know, that he could get double digits. If it's over 10, if it's hitting 11, I might think to do something else. But 9, I'm doing it.
Yeah, I honestly, 9 to 10, I would do the deal. Now, I brought up that number that I brought up because looking at the Freeman deal, and this is the thing, you got funny money, right?
Yeah.
You want to on paper show that you got your guy double digit average. But in all actuality, the $34 million or $36 million guaranteed would be a $9 million per year.
Yep.
Real money. And on top of that, the reason why I jumped to 36 was because Devontae Freeman 2 years ago was guaranteed $22 million.
We will continue this conversation when we come back. Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Old school hip hop on Chase and TD tonight. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport, Calvin Smith on the ones and twos behind the glass. Talking a little free agency for the Tennessee Titans. It's the bye week. I think it's a good time for us to jump into this. You heard us mention what we will dub the big three: Ryan Tannehill, or the quarterback position overall, Derrick Henry, Logan Ryan. Those to me are going to be at the top of the priority list for John Robinson, in my opinion. But And you know, I thought it was interesting what Joel said about Logan Ryan, that if you basically just give him the same contract, you inflate a little bit, you're looking at 11-5 or 12, which, you know what? He made a good point. If you think he's better than Malcolm Butler, you got to pay him more than Malcolm Butler. And you know what? I think he's better than Malcolm Butler.
Yeah. He's thinking like an agent.
Yeah.
Because that's what he is. So that is an excellent point. I still think he has to be back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, obviously, at a reasonable number. But I still think he has to be back.
So how much would you pay the quarterback if it's Ryan Tannehill? How much would you pay Ryan Tannehill?
Well, if it's I would do a 3-year deal. Try to tune
3 years. Interesting.
Hear me out.
Okay.
Try to tune it to where you could get out of it after that second year.
Yeah.
That's really – because, listen, and Ryan Tannehill's agents, they're not silly,
yeah.
Right? They're not stupid. They understand what's at stake. So they're not going to agree to a deal where you get out of it after 1 year unless they guarantee 35 in that first year. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So you're going to have to, within reason, I say a 3-year deal, 2 years. I'm going – I would say 3 years – Joe Corey said it. You're going to have to pay at least $20, $21 million.
Right.
It's bottom line. So I would say 3 years, I will put it probably in the $60 million range, but guarantee $40 to $45 million of it. And it's crazy to just throw these numbers around like that because we're talking about millions of dollars.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you look at the quarterback position.
So I'll ask you this question.
Yeah.
Because you've now committed 3 years at a lot of money.
Committed 2 years.
Or 2 years, but
funny
a lot of money.
Yeah. 3 years.
Yeah, because that all the GMs do that. So you've committed for at least 2 years to Ryan Tannehill. Does that mean you're required to draft your next quarterback in this draft? Or are you able to, Calvin shaking his head, or are you able to fill some other needs that you have, go with Tannehill, bring in either draft somebody that could just be a backup or go sign a backup, and you're just going with 17?
Well, I'm going to ask you this question. If you look at this group of quarterbacks, is there anybody that you say day one of training camp, we're
that's my guy?
That's it. We're running with so-and-so.
Yes, but the Titans won't be able to draft him.
Who, Joe Burrow?
Burrow or Tua.
I can't do it.
Yeah, I mean,
I wouldn't day one say either one of those are my quarterback.
I wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable about it, but I also have to see the combine. I have to see training camp. I mean, I need to see a little bit more.
You have injury questions with Tua.
Yep.
And then with Burrow, let's face the facts.
System.
There's limited and system. There's limit, right. That's something to take note of. You know what I mean? Everybody called Dwayne Haskins a system quarterback. He threw 50 daggone touchdowns, but he was a system quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to apply that same logic. If you're going to apply that to Haskins, you apply it to Burrow. However, after those two, with Jalen Hurts,
Jacob Eason.
You could go to Cincinnati and get Fromm.
Yeah.
Because that's Andy Dalton.
Wow.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So I don't know that it is mandatory to draft it. And here's the other thing. That guy down there at Wake Forest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's legit.
I don't know if he's coming out this year. He can, but there are going to be guys.
Jamie Newman? Is that who you're talking about? Okay.
Jamie Newman. Yeah. He's a player. You want throws from the pocket? He makes them. You want somebody who single-handedly makes everyone else better? He makes them. Folks, if you are looking at quarterbacks, a good game to watch, watch the season opener, Wake Forest against Utah State, because Jordan Love is another guy that should be of interest. Now, he had a late interception that cost the Utah State the game, but that's a good option, a good opportunity to watch two guys that should be in consideration.
Yeah, I'll say this, J-Rob, you know, just go find a guy in the third round, and, you know, he'll be the MVP and win you a Super Bowl. So there you go. Just do that. Just look at what Seattle did. It's that easy. Call Pete Carroll. He'll tell you what to do.
Yeah, well, you know, that was benefiting from identifying a guy that you know is a football player, regardless of the spider charts and measurables.
And talk to Pete Carroll. I've gotten to sit and listen to Pete Carroll go through that whole thing, sitting there with Floyd and Jared. You should do that sometime. It's
did it at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
The year, unfortunately, yeah. Russell Wilson threw the pick to, you know, that cost him a touchdown.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that's not going to happen too often, especially now you see a short guy,
sure.
Kyler, get. But my thing is this. I get it. You want to have your young quarterback. You want to go out and do it, but you don't force it.
Yep.
This is a team, actually, that is a good example of not forcing it. Jake Locker, right? You look at the Vikings. You can look to the NFC. The Vikings, they forced Christian Ponder? No. You mean to tell me you're going to pick Christian Ponder?
Well, he won in life.
Oh, yeah. He definitely won in multiple ways.
He won.
You know, so that's the thing. You can't force it.
Yeah, I don't lose sleep for Christian Ponder.
No, he'll be all right.
Let me tell you. All right. So besides the big three, before we get out of here for this hour, look, there are, I think, 23 players that are going to be free agents. They're not all going to come back, but I think there are some names on here, maybe lower on the list, that John Robinson should look at. You mentioned LaShawn Sims.
Yep.
He's been a big piece or been an important piece, a depth piece for this team. That's somebody that maybe you should look at. And I'll give you another one. You may agree or disagree. I know he's going to be 35, but the Lumberjack has been a big part of this team. Wesley Woodyard, he's a leader in the locker room. They're not using him as much. They probably won't bring him back. But I would at least have the conversation and think about it if he's interested.
It's definitely something to think about. I think they will wholeheartedly look at how they can make it work, but I just don't see it working. And it's a shame because you go in that locker room, you see Wesley Woodruff is a leader on that team.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
All the way down to something silly. Like, I did a post that came out yesterday. On Fridays, they play FIFA. That's their thing, yeah. FIFA 20. He's the commissioner of the league. You know what I'm saying? Like, the dude is a leader on the field, off the field. He's someone – he had an awesome piece. Actually, Titans Online is running a beautiful series where it's called My Story.
Yeah,
It kicked off with Wesley Woodruff. And one of the things he talked about was – being a leader off the field, mm-hmm. and someone that the guys could go to. And you see it. You know what I mean? So it's a good option. I just don't think it happens. For me, though, when I look at some of these later guys, Dennis Kelly, you absolutely bring back.
Yep.
Jack Conklin, hey, look, man, don't let the door hit you. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's kind of the mindset. We wish you the best, but we are going with Dennis Kelly. That is what I would say.
As your starting right tackle?
As the starting right tackle.
I completely agree. I'd be totally fine with that.
So you got that one. Then not to mention Trey Adams in the draft from Washington. Yeah. He might be a guy, too, at right tackle. But nevertheless, I think you absolutely bring back Anthony Firkser.
Mm-hmm.
He's monumental to this team. A few other guys.
Tight end is going to be interesting, Teron, because I'm not 100% convinced 82's back.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. I'm not convinced he is either. And it's unfortunate.
Yep.
Because he's another guy in the locker room that has been huge. So, like you said, they're going to be 20 or so. You got Michael Pruitt. You got Tajay Sharp. I'm not sure what they do with those guys. Kamale Correa. You got
And you can't bring everyone back. I mean, that's life.
These,
that's football.
These are guys I'm mentioning that I don't think are going to be back. You know what I mean? Matt Dickerson.
Kevin Pomfield, I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's probably not back.
Yeah, I mean, he's not even active. You know, Darren Bates, I don't think that he's coming back. So that's the thing. You look at a guy like a Darren Bates, you could get that in the draft, right?
Yeah.
And when you look at that inside linebacker position, you have Rashawn Evans, Jayon Brown, David Long as your rotational guy. You could go out and get them. And there's so many linebackers, especially inside backers, that will fit into your scheme. So not so sure Darren Bates is a guy that they bring back either.
So we will see how that shakes out. But like we said, 6 games left in the regular season. We'll take a look at the remaining schedule, discuss that next. And also Myles Garrett will get into all of that in hour number 2 on Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase and TD rolls on ESPN 102.5 The Game. He is Teron Davenport from ESPN. I am Chase McCabe. Calvin Smith, our producer, at @TDavenport_NFL on Twitter, at @ChaseOnGame, at Smith A. Calvin, not Calvin A. Smith, at Smith A. Calvin. Hey, if you miss anything on the show, check out our new pod center. Just search Talking with TD. That is Teron's podcast, but you get this show as well on iTunes, on Google, on Spotify. It's available everywhere. Rate, subscribe, review. Check that out. Search Talking with TD. So, Teron, what we will talk about now, the Titans schedule for the rest of the way. They're off this week, but they come back in week 12, and they take on the Jacksonville Jaguars at Nissan Stadium, the second meeting. I think the next game is always the most important, but this is a division game, so that adds even more to it. And then they go on the road the following week to take on the Colts. In my mind, for the Tennessee Titans to even have any type of conversation about making the playoffs, let alone winning the division, they have to win those 2 games.
Absolutely. For me, frankly, they have to win every single game. The one that they could afford to lose is the Saints. That's the only one I see that they could afford to lose that game. Because right now what you have is a cluster from spot 6 through spot 10. As far as playoff seeding is concerned. Now, that nonsense yesterday, the Browns ended up winning. The Steelers are now 5-5. The Titans are 5-5. That dropped the Steelers from 6 to 8 in the playoff seeding. Mm-hmm. However, the things you have to look at, they have a game. So this week, the Jaguars, obviously the first game is always the most important. Jacksonville is 1-2 against the division. The Titans are 0-2 against the division. Division games count as double.
Yep.
Home game at that. So they have to win that one. Then after that.
And Jacksonville and Indy play each other this week.
So that will definitely help. Jacksonville's 4-6. Indy's 5-4. In this situation, Titans fans will probably want to root for Jacksonville this week. So, that being said, you mentioned the Colts. They go to the Colts. You got to break that curse.
Yep.
12 games in a row you've lost, you have to beat that team. You absolutely
Well, no, they did. They beat them when Jacoby was in for Luck the first time a few years ago.
Okay, so
they never beat Andrew Luck. That was the streak.
So what they've lost, so let's put it this way. They lost 12 out of the last 13 games. That's still pitiful. That being said, the game after that, you got in Oakland. Like I said, Oakland is the number 6 seed right now.
That's interesting.
And that's going to be a very reunited, and it feels so good, right? Yeah. Taylor Lewan and Will Compton, the boys playing against each other. That's going to be an interesting game. But more seriously, you have another Alabama running back in Josh Jacobs who is doing the thing.
Good.
That's right.
Yep.
Everybody said, well, you don't draft a running back in the first round.
Chucky doesn't care.
He's been productive, and I love the comparison, and this is one that I've made before he got drafted. Charlie Garner, they are the same player. You young guys, you millennials, check the internet.
Yeah, I know.
Charlie Garner's the real deal. But so those are just all games that they have to win. I mean, we have to mention two games against the Texans, who are the division leader. If this team, Titans fans, you want to see a game in January here at Nissan Stadium, they got to win both of those Texans games. That's imperative.
Yeah, and look, this weekend could be big for the Titans, and they're not even playing. Mm-hmm. We mentioned Jacksonville taking on Indianapolis. Pull for the Jags, because then that puts everyone behind the Texans at 5-5. Oh, by the way, the hottest team in football that everybody's just drooling over right now, the Baltimore Ravens, they play the Texans. So if you're a Titans fan, go Ravens, go Jags. That's what you're pulling for.
Go Ravens, go Jags. I'm not sure who the Raiders play. That's one that we probably should also look at.
The Oakland Raiders and John Gruden, their head coach, will take on the Cincinnati Bengals at home.
Yeah.
Raiders are at home. So they'll move to 6-4.
More than that. But it's the NFL.
I know.
You know what happens.
Look, Indy lost to Miami.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, look, I doubt they, to your point, I doubt. So it's really interesting, man. And you got the Bills in there too. The Bills got the Dolphins this week. So the Bills and the Chiefs are in there also. But the Chiefs are more than likely going to win their division. So that's not really one that you kind of target. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're going to be at the very least a 4 seed. And behind them is the Chargers. They're 4-6. You know, the Browns, 4-6. And obviously going to be without number 95, you know, after what happened yesterday. But still, they're in the mix.
So that schedule right there, and you mentioned the Saints game is the one, okay, you can lose that. So I said earlier that 6 games, obviously, you're good. Nothing to worry about. You win all 6, you're playing January football. Mm-hmm. If you win 5 out of the 6, I think you feel pretty good. You're probably winning the division because – if 2 of those wins are over Houston. Now, it depends on where the loss is. The loss pretty much needs to be to the Saints. Could be to the Raiders, but it can't be a division game. If you win 4 out of 6, you're going to need help. And again, it matters where those losses are. So I think that's kind of where they have to look. Obviously, you ask the players, you ask the coaches, they're going to tell you one game at a time.
Right.
Which you can't blame them. That's what you have to do. But in my mind, for us to continue this conversation, if you don't win the next 2, it's a moot point.
Well, here's the problem. I'm going to tell you why there's a huge problem for the Titans. They have five of their remaining games are against AFC opponents.
Yep.
Okay. So when you look at their conference record, they're 3-4. Their record out of all the teams. So you got the Raiders who are 3-2 in conference. The Colts are 4-4. The Steelers are 4-3. The Titans 3-4, as I mentioned. The Jaguars 4-3. The Browns right behind Jacksonville at 4-3. Their record out of the top 11 teams in conference is the worst.
Yep. And can't have that.
You that gotta, just places – exactly.
Got to win division games, got to win conference games.
Exactly. So that loss to the Bills.
The Colts and the Bills, yeah. Those are two losses that at the end of this season, I have a feeling they're going to be going, we only had those back.
Yep, I agree. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, as you mentioned, they have to take it one game at a time. We fortunately don't have to prepare.
Nope.
And so we could look at the rest of the season, and everything will be all right, you know.
I am going to be curious to, with those two games against the Texans being, you know, 2 weeks apart, or being, yeah, 2 weeks apart. I think that's going to be interesting that they have to play here against Houston, then they're here against the Saints, and then they turn around and go to Houston. Look, there is a very good chance that Week 17 game at Houston could be Sunday night, because there are a lot, I don't know if you've heard this, there are a lot of fans that have said they're going to go to Houston to the Titans game. And then they're going to go over to Dallas for the Winter Classic when the Preds play at the Cotton Bowl against the Dallas Stars. That'd be a fun little trip,
yeah.
You know, after the holidays, you know, before the New Year, to go see that. But I know those fans that are going to be doing that want that game against Houston to mean something, or already have things locked up. But we could see another situation where the Titans get flexed to Sunday Night Football, fighting for a division.
Yeah, and hey, I'm all for that. I love the primetime games. They're always fun to cover.
You're primetime Tehran.
I wouldn't say all of that. But another thing just to look at real quick on the schedule, you mentioned the Saints, right? That's the second to the last game. Okay, you know what? The Saints, you figure, are going to be towards the top of the NFC, but here's the problem. You got a 49ers team who has a better record than them.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Seahawks. You have the Packers. Those teams are all in the same record, 8-2, right? So here's the deal. You probably are going to see Drew Brees and the all-out Saints attack on that second to the last game. You can't be in a situation where you're like, okay, you know what, the Saints are going to throttle down, because they're going to be playing for that number one seed. And we've already seen how this Saints team, they want to play. They want the path to the Super Bowl to go through that Superdome.
Yep.
That's how they want it. So they're going to go all out throughout the season.
So we'll see how that shakes out. When we come back, though, we have been on the air for an hour and almost 15 minutes and haven't really gotten into this yet, but it's time. Myles Garrett, that whole situation. Tehran and I will discuss that next here on Chase and TD, ESPN 1025 The Game. We're back. Chase and TD, ESPN 1025 The Game. Chase McCabe, Tehran Davenport of ESPN, covers the Titans for them. Calvin Smith behind the glass. So the time has come, my friend. We must discuss Myles Garrett and that ugliness that was the Steelers and the Cleveland Browns. It was an ugly game. It was at the end of the game. 8 seconds left, and the entire conversation changed with Mason Rudolph basically getting sacked, and then Myles Garrett hit him in the head with a helmet. You have Myles Garrett that has been suspended indefinitely, at least for the rest of the season and postseason. He'll meet with the commissioner and with the league during the offseason to apply for reinstatement. You have Marquise Pouncey that was suspended for 3 games for his role trying to kick at Myles Garrett and punch Myles Garrett. And you have Larry Ogunjobi that got a game for shoving down Mason Rudolph. Mason Rudolph did not get anything. He's going to get a fine. Yeah, well, I agree. I think he should have sat a game. I think he should have been suspended a game. All three, from what I have seen and heard, will appeal. But I believe the league got it right from the Myles Garrett point of view. He should be done for the year. And if I'm him, I don't appeal. I take my medicine and realize that what you did has no place in the game of football. I understand you were provoked. I understand you were pissed off. But you cannot take a dude's helmet and hit him over the head with it. You can't.
You absolutely cannot. And here's the deal. I mean, you can't lose your cool like that. That's really the bottom line. And this is the problem, though, with Myles Garrett. It's a pattern. It started in the season opener. He tried to slide Delanie Walker.
Yep.
Delanie showed an excellent example of how you handle things. You know what I mean? And I know, listen, Delanie didn't come up in a demographic where you just let it go when someone tries to steal you in your face.
Yeah.
But what did he do? Let it go. You know what I mean?
What always happens to the guy that retaliates?
The guy that retaliates gets caught. But, yeah. you know, he kept his cool.
He did.
And look, that was one situation. Trevor Siemian, you had a late hit carried out when it shouldn't have been. The dude's season is gone. Here's the deal, man. If the crown of that helmet hits Mason Rudolph instead of the bottom part, that dude,
Yeah, who knows?
Exactly. Because he's already suffered a severe concussion earlier this year. I'm telling you, man, that helmet, that thing is, that's a dangerous weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is,
and the league said that, like, he used the helmet as a weapon.
Yeah, without a doubt, man.
If I do that to you, Teron, the police are coming in here and taking me to jail.
It's a different situation, though. You know, and that's one of the things you ask a lot of guys. They'll tell you that's one of the things they love about football. You could do stuff to someone on the football field and get away with it, that if you did it in the street, you'd get in trouble.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go to that extent to where the assault charges should be pressed. I'm not going to go to that extent. But it's egregious. It's inexcusable. I'm not going to say it's unprecedented. You know, David Mulgeta, Kevin Byard's agent, Kenny Vaccaro's agent, he posted something on Twitter that was an excellent point. I'm not saying I am by no means condoning Myles Garrett's behavior, because he needs to be punished to the maximum by the NFL. What I am saying is, you look at Gronkowski did. He gave Trey Davis White, I'm trying to think the wrestler's name, Greg the Hammer Valentine, like that elbow.
Getting the elbow drop.
He gave him an elbow drop, and it cost Trey White. It injured him.
Yeah.
Gronk did that and got one game. So my thing is, I get it. You know, what he did was terrible. I just, as David Mulgeta said, wish they would have the same energy consistently going forward.
Earlier today on Darren Donick and Chase, we had Titans cornerback Logan Ryan on with us, and they played the Browns earlier this year to kick off the season. I asked Logan Ryan his thoughts on the incident last night.
I've never seen anything like that. That was one of the most inexplicable, cowardly things I've ever seen. I couldn't believe it. I'm sitting there thinking, look at all the money this guy's losing with 8 seconds left. I mean, it's foolish. I mean, then you see the replay. I didn't actually know he hit him in the head. I thought he just swung at him, but still, I think that's why the Browns are the Browns, a little undisciplined, and why they're not having the season they're having. And that stuff matters, man. That stuff counts. You know, there'll be a large suspension there. We'll see. It'll be record-setting because I've never seen. I know, obviously, the Haynesworth that you guys are going to talk about. But I didn't watch that game. But I watched that one live. My wife was shocked. So it was shocking for sure. And, I mean, I think the NFL is obviously going to do what they have to do there. But
as somebody that plays this game at a high level every week, how tough is it when you're in just an intense moment to not retaliate? Because you guys see it all the time, that the guy that retaliates, he gets it too. Sometimes he gets it worse than the guy that even started it.
Yeah, you know, it's not that tough, though. You got to understand what's at stake. You know what I'm saying? If it's one thing, then meet me at the bus after the game. Or, you know, we all know where each other's trains and where we – if someone has a problem with somebody, that's easily could be handled face-to-face. But ripping a helmet off a man and hitting him in the head with it when he really didn't do anything that bad to you, I mean, someone much smaller than you at that, like, that's not tough. You know, I don't think emotions need to boil that far. I think it's selfish. And really think that was a tough move, or I don't think that was hard to do. I mean, that's never been done for a reason, and a lot worse has been done to people. Trust me, I've been in piles. I played this game for a long time, and I never got to that point. So I don't think that's tough. I think that it's criminal, honestly.
There you go, Logan Ryan today. Darren Donick and Chase. You can search for Darren Donick and Chase in iTunes or Spotify and check out all of our interviews and shows from there. So you heard that, and you and I have talked about this earlier. You heard it live. You just heard the replay there. Logan Ryan didn't hold back, and I appreciated that because that's what I was looking for. And, you know, for him to end it saying it's downright criminal, I mean, that shows you what he thought about it. Mm-hmm. But I'll go back to something else he said. That's why the Browns are in the situation they are. So how much of that falls on Freddie Kitchens and the type of culture that he's trying to create in Cleveland?
Well, I tell you what, I heard Todd Haley on NFL, on Sirius XM NFL radio, and he was saying that if it's allowed by the coach, you know, like these type of things, a failure of discipline, it adds up to something like that. So he questioned the coach and said, now obviously there's a bit of an axe to grind. He mm-hmm. is no longer there, but I think his point is right. The Browns are the most penalized team. And, oh, by the way, there was another very, very ugly situation earlier in that game where you had Demaryius Randle literally ear hole that receiver.
Yeah, and get thrown out.
Yeah, he got thrown out, but the dude got walked off the field with blood leaking out his ear.
Yeah.
That's severe. Like, that is what I call head trauma, yeah. Brain trauma, blood leaking out his ear. So for me, and that wasn't the only time, Juju Smith-Schuster got knocked out of the game because of a concussion. And then the Browns, they are the most penalized team in the league.
Yeah.
The level of undiscipline, whether it be the stupid clown shoe issues, the wearing a watch during the game, bruh.
Right.
Focus on the game, not all this foolishness. And that's where Freddie Kitchens, he's failing. He is failing miserably.
Absolutely.
It's great that they beat the Steelers and the Ravens in the same year. That's a huge accomplishment for this franchise. But there are bigger issues that have to be fixed.
You know what's so ironic? We're going to hear from Jeff Fisher in just a second. But what's so ironic about this, last year Greg Williams became the interim head coach. I was one of those people that thought Greg Williams did a good enough job that he should have been named the head coach.
Yeah, me too.
He should have gotten the job. And I think you and I can speculate on why he didn't and why he'll probably never be a head coach again. He's still in the league. He's a defensive coordinator with the Jets now. But that team had discipline.
Exactly.
He is a hard you-know-what and can handle personalities like OBJ and Baker Mayfield, Myles Garrett. That kind of stuff wouldn't happen with him.
Mm-mm, not at
all. And everybody wants to go back to Bounty Gate and all that stuff, and what he did was wrong. I mean, it was. He did his time. He paid the fine. He did his time. I think that this team would have had much more discipline with him, and you're just seeing the inmates run the asylum, so to speak, the old phrase, with Freddie Kitchens.
I think so, too. But there was another thing that Logan Ryan said, and when he said it, I was just like, you know what? That is real talk. 100% pure, unadulterated,
meet me raw, at the bus.
Real talk. If it's all like that, if you really got an issue, go meet that man at the bus. Or like he said, you know where each other, where yep. you train. Like if it's really an issue, we can handle it. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be right then and there. And look, man, Myles Garrett, like you could fit Mason Rudolph inside of Myles Garrett. You don't need to use a weapon on that dude.
Nope.
Your fist alone is a weapon. But most importantly, none of that type of – on Rudolph's part, on the only person I say, you know what, I get it, you did the right thing, is Pouncey.
Because I disagree with you.
Forget that. Let me tell you something. You go through a training camp like that with someone and you bleed with that person, you sweat with that person, you cry with that person, if something like that happens, you have to defend it. And to be honest with you, I'm gonna tell you this. If me and you, me and Calvin, any of us, if we were walking on the street and somebody approached you and did something, I would have that same reaction. It's just different. When you're homies with somebody, when you boys with somebody, no, ain't none of that is going down. We are going to go down together, or we're probably gonna win, or we're gonna go down together. But forget that. It's not gonna be just you taking a beat down.
To that point, because I had no problem with him punching. It was the kicking part that.
Man, look, you got to do what you got
to
do.
To that point, though, former Titans head coach Jeff Fisher was also on Darren Donick and Chase today, and he gave his thoughts on this situation.
Disappointed in the aftermath, disappointed in how the Browns handled it. I don't think you have a young, inexperienced head coach go up there unprepared without a statement in such an enormous issue. I mean, this was a huge issue it's going to be a huge issue, but like anything else, it's going to come and go. But nonetheless, number one, post-game, Freddie doesn't have a statement prepared. He's just winging it. It doesn't look good. Secondly, you have made available Myles Garrett, which I don't think you do. I think you say, we'll have a press conference tomorrow. You let things cool down. You get Myles and put him in a position where he makes a statement only. He regrets the conduct, all those kind of things. So it was a mess to begin with. And here's the bottom line in all this, in my opinion. The hundreds and thousands of youth football participants and high school football players and everything got to see that. That's a mess. That's unfortunate for the National Football League. There's no place for this. No place for that conduct. I've never seen anything like it. Yeah, somebody referenced Kyle Turley. We pulled a helmet off and threw it years ago, but nobody used a helmet as a weapon.
Jeff Fisher on with us today. He goes on to say, to your point, that he brings up Maurkice Pouncey, and he goes, listen, the unoffensive lineman, you touch his quarterback, you know, as the head coach, you got to do what you got to do. So, to your point, you know, the offensive lineman is going to protect the quarterback by any means necessary. Mm-hmm. Had that been Taylor Lewan, Myles Garrett might not be walking out of there. I mean, I agree. I mean, I know how offensive linemen are.
It goes beyond that. It's just there's certain – I was just raised to, you know, if I'm with you and something pops – I have to handle my business.
Yeah, no, you know? I understand. And I'm the same way, like, with all my friends. Like, you mess with my friends, you mess with me. That's kind of how, and I go to I have a different side that most people don't see, but don't mess with my people.
Right.
So,
right.
An offensive lineman are that way about the quarterback.
Yeah, so for me, I have no problem with Pouncey's reaction because it's a double down.
Yeah.
Not only is it football, but it's upbringing. You don't let something happen. And that's he reacted, and I have no issue. I bet you will struggle to find a person in a locker room that had an issue with
him
outside of Cleveland, because obviously they're going to be like, oh, well, he shouldn't. Yo, he stomped him out, though.
With all that said, though, do you see his suspension getting reduced?
It needs to be. It needs to be. Honestly, it needs to be reduced. I think a one-game suspension is valid for him. Again, you suspended Gronk for one game. For dropping the hammer elbow on somebody, why is Pouncey 3 games? And I understand that the what happened, like it was primetime football, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think the punishment fits the action in this case.
Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport here with you. Chase and TD, when we come back, we get back into the Tennessee Titans. We're going to hand out some grades here on the bye week. We will grade the head coach, the OC, and the DC. We do that next. Chase and TD, ESPN 1025 The Game. Make the music to my old school hip-hop tonight on Chase and TD, a high school football playoff night here in the mid-state. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport here with you. Calvin Smith behind the glass. And in high school, you got grades. That's why I brought that up. You got some grades. And sometimes some of us would try and prevent our moms from seeing those grades. And sometimes we'd brag about those grades. And that's what we're going to do now. We're going to hand some out to the head coach, Mike Vrabel, Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator, Dean Pease, the defensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans. This should be fun. Where do you want to start?
Hey, look, you got to start from the top, right? A fish stinks from the head, or you know, it's good from the head. Yeah. So we'll go right to the head coach. And you want me to give my grade first?
Yeah, I have a feeling yours could be a little higher than mine.
I'm going to give a realistic grade of a C. I think there have been moments where you kind of scratch your head and you're like, what are you thinking, right? The 4th and 6 against the Falcons. That was one. He's just like, okay, what's going on? I still think the good in him and Coach Vrabel is having the gall, having the audacity to pull the plug on the Mariota experiment.
I made him the Mac Daddy that week.
That one right there. That move right there earns him a lot of points. However, I also still feel he has that locker room. You know what I mean? I still feel that those guys play for him. I don't think that's an issue. But there are multiple areas for improvement. For me, early in the game, they continue to start games flat. This is an offense that has been shut out 4 times. And I don't know if it's sticking to the script too long. What it is, preparation, I don't know. But I have an issue with how this team starts football games. I think this week or the next week coming up against the Jaguars, app coming out of the bye week. Listen, you come out of the bye week, there's a tendency to have that rust with quotation marks, a tendency to have that slower start. This will be something that they cannot afford to do against the Jaguars at, I almost said at Lincoln Financial Field, at Nissan Stadium.
Right.
You know what I mean? So those are my shortcomings for Coach Mike Vrabel.
I agree with you. I'm going to give him a C as well. I agree with everything you just said. I'll take it a step further. I think it's extremely important that he has the locker room. Those players love playing for him. Mm-hmm. Anyone that you talk to will tell you they love playing for Mike. With all that said, he is still struggling to find the balance of the former player and the coach. Mm. He's not a player anymore. That's just the bottom line. You're not a player anymore. And you need to act – he needs to act more like a head coach sometimes. Think, you know, the fourth down plays – and him, you know, saying, look, I believe in our guys. I think our guys are going to make the play. There's a lot of emotion there. That's a player. That's thinking like a player. That's where I think he's got to rein it in a little bit. You know, I didn't necessarily – I know some people had a problem with the pile at the end of the game with Kalu after Kalu blocked the kick. I'm okay with that. That's his personality.
Nitpicking.
That's fine. But I do think there are times where he – coaches like a player and he doesn't coach like a coach.
Well, I'm going to say this. Mike Vrabel is not the only coach that I've heard say, I believe in my players. Frank Reich says that all the time. You got, I mean, outside of Belichick, like I never hear Belichick saying that, but I hear so many other coaches say that. And I get it. You do believe in your players. So I'm not going to say that as much. But at the end of the day, you do have to separate emotions from the decisions. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where having a guy, even if it's Dean Pease, you know what I mean, as the assistant head coach, I think, you know, just having someone in there to be that voice of reason.
Completely,
you know,
agree.
I think that's where it would help so much more.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I look, I have nothing against him saying I believe in my guys, but when you get questioned about, quite frankly, dumb decisions, and that's always your go-to. It's like, okay, of course you believe in your guys, but why are you making these decisions? That's what we're asking. That's what we want to know. And he can't give a good answer. And to your point, I think some sort of assistant head coach, advisor, or however you want to put it, is something that he needs. All right, offensive coordinator, first-year OC Arthur Smith. What do you think about him?
You know, I'm giving him an incomplete. That's really the grade that I have to give him. Because, again, it goes back to what I said before. The play design is there. Are there times, you know, his play calling against the Panthers, it was egregious.
Again, especially in the first half.
Derrick Henry, 2 carries, 13 carries for the game against the 25th ranked run defense. That's unconscionable, to use Marvin Levy's term. I think it's still incomplete, though, because you're seeing more effectiveness from the offense with a different guy running it. I'm not saying Ryan Tannehill is Drew Brees. I'm not saying he's Joe Montana. What I am saying is he's a better match for this scheme. He's running this scheme more effectively than Mariota was. For that reason, I feel like it's incomplete. Because, look, this team – so you take 7 away from what they put up last week. In 4 games, I mean, they're scoring points.
Yep.
They're scoring points. So, well, what did they put up against the Panthers? 20, I think it was?
Yeah.
Yeah, 20. So, I mean, they've scored at least 20 points 4 times in a row.
Yep.
More times than not, they're leaning towards the high 20s. With Ryan Tannehill as the quarterback. Now, before Tannehill took over, they had 7 points in 2 games.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a seesaw here. And for me, when I combine the two, I still feel it's incomplete because I wonder how that offense would have been with Tannehill steering the wheel. That's just the bottom line. So I say incomplete.
So I like your reasoning for that. I will give a grade, and I'm going to say B minus. Based on everything you just said, that he didn't, he's had Tannehill over the course of the last four games. They've gone 3-1. You are seeing this offense start to click. I think Arthur Smith is becoming more confident in his role as a play caller. Where I take points off is just the inconsistency. And that, you know, whether, you know, what you said about running Derrick Henry 13 times against Carolina. And then he turns around against Kansas City, which has just as bad of a rush defense.
It was worse.
Right. And he runs Derrick Henry just all game long. And they win the game. He uses him right. I go back to Tampa Bay. They had one of the best rush defenses in the league, and he still ran Derrick Henry. So it's finding that consistency of, okay, when do I stick to the plan? When do I parachute out? You know, all of that. And that's going to come with experience. And I think that goes to Vrabel, too, of having more experience, where you'll see some of that. But I think he's done okay. I think he can be better. B minus could be a little generous. You could say C plus, argue that in there, but that's where I have it. And then finally, this one was going to be easy for me, Dean Pease.
Yeah, I just real quick on the inconsistency part. I don't know that he's been that inconsistent as a play caller, you know, because looking at the Bucs game, he ran Derrick Henry 16 times. I think that was still.
And I like that.
That's a fair amount. And that's one of the few games that they had Derrick Henry get the ball 15. Well, yeah, they won that. So, yeah, that's one of the 10 games. So, I'm not fully on board with the inconsistent part of it. I think quarterback play has been more inconsistent. But, yeah, Dean Pease, that's an easy one. I'm going A for Dean Pease.
Me too.
I think it goes without saying. You look at this team, they are plus on the turnover side of things. They consistently get the ball for this offense in really good field position. It's something that's been that way this whole year. He has managed a way to fully take advantage of Logan Ryan's versatility. And I'm not just talking about him covering slot receivers. I'm talking about using him in the blitz, creating ways to get pressure. But then on top of that, Logan Ryan is second on the team in sacks. He's second in sacks, but second in tackles. So for me, when I look at this, this is a guy that they are getting fully involved in run defense, in rushing the passer, as well as defense. That's an example. But then also, just – and he said it himself, not only are the players getting more used to his scheme, he's getting more used to the players. So now it's just a lot better because that familiarity is there. How many times have you seen him do things like make a call and it was perfect timing? Mm-hmm. Whether it be a coverage or whether it be sending Malcolm Butler on a blitz from the outside corner position. These are things, but if there was one thing that I would have to knock for Dean Pease, it's the third down situations.
Yeah.
This team is giving up. There are times where they really struggle to get off the field. Some of it is tackling. You know, you look at Tyreek Hill, they had him 3rd and 1. Adoree Jackson tackled him. He fought through the tackle and got the first down. These are things that Dean Pease cannot control. However, there are things that he can control, like allowing a first down on 3rd and 14 in these type of situations. That is where they have to improve.
I agree with you on all those things. I also have him at an A. And I think the third down stuff, they have to work on that. But otherwise, I've been pretty pleased with this defense. All right, when we come back, we'll have the Mac Derrick Daddy of the Week. We'll do that next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Who's the Mac Daddy? Mac Daddy,
Mac Daddy, Mac Daddy, Mac Daddy. We're back, Chase and TD, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport, Calvin Smith. We do it every week, the Mac Daddy of the Week. Listen, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out who it's going to be this week. Derrick Henry. There you go. Derrick Henry, easily the Mac Daddy of the Week. That 68-yard run, 188 yards on the ground for Derrick Henry. They gave him the rock. He ran the rock, and he ran it down their throats.
21 miles an hour.
That's fast.
Very fast.
For a big dude like that, That is fast. But look, that was the game plan, and they stuck with it.
Yeah. Great job. All parties involved, man. Great job.
usually at this time, we're preparing for a game and we give our players on offense and defense for both teams to watch this week. But with it being the bye week, we're going to do offense and defense for the Titans to watch the rest of the way. So I'll start with you for offense. Who are you watching the rest of the way for the Tennessee Titans?
Hey, listen, man, I touched on it before. Complimentary football, moving the chains, safe throws to minimize turnovers, high percentage. Doesn't get much better than 80%. Adam Humphries, man, that's my player to watch going forward. And I think when you look at Humphries, the catch that he had, bending just inside, that move at the top of the route, and getting that positioning to make that tough catch and powering into the end zone for the game winner, I think that should be a springboard of something big for Ryan Tannehill and Adam Humphries. So for me, he's the key. That's it, yeah. Adam Humphries.
Well, you heard it earlier with Joel Corey. You said, who is the quarterback's best friend? He said the running back is one of them, and then the offensive line. The anchor on the offensive line for the Tennessee Titans is and should be the left tackle, Taylor Lewan. That is who I'm going to watch. He got in front of all the reporters after the game before he was ever asked a question. He said he put himself on the witness stand and he said, my penalties are a problem. I'm killing drives. I'm hurting the team. Bada bing, bada boom. Okay, you're right. You are. You admitted it. But you've admitted it before. Mm-hmm. You've come out and said that before. You've said, I got to be better. I can't get penalties. And yet you continue to do it. So Taylor Lewan, I said this on Monday, I'll say it again. Shut up. Go play the game. Play mistake-free football. Don't get a false start. Don't get a face mask. Holds are going to happen. I get it. You're an offensive lineman. Okay. There's a hold on every play. Go out there and stop doing it. Be a leader. Be the left tackle. Stop hurting your team. That is the player that I'm watching the rest of the way on offense for the Titans.
Cue up the Mike Singletary quote. Don't tell me, show me.
Exactly. And I like Taylor Lewan. I do. And I'll say this. Everything that I've said on the air this week, I would say to his face. I would say, dude, you're better than this. Mm-hmm. I know you can be better than this. And I love the personality. I love that he's a go-to guy. I love the bussing with the boys. That's great. You got to stop hurting your team, though, because not only have you done it since you've been back, but you did it being out for four games.
Yeah.
And I know that that was a mistake, and he took ownership, and I gave him a lot of praise for that. But it still hurt the team. So, dude, help yourself, help the team, stop with the penalties.
That's it.
Defense.
Good. Defense. Hey, for me, man, Harold Landry is the guy to watch. He has 7 sacks. You know, he's really showing how he could bend that corner. And get to the quarterback. It goes back to what I said was one of the keys for this team is being plus on the turnover side of things. Impacting the quarterback leads to that. Sack strips lead to that, as well as being Johnny on the spot and catching a deflected ball. He's done that as well. I think Harold Landry continuing to ascend to the top pass rusher on this team is important for the defense, and he's a guy that, you know what? He has a knack for making plays at the right time. Just go back and look to the Colts game to end the season last year. He had that sack strip, and it was a huge turnover. Harold Landry is the key to watch for me on the Titans defense.
Yeah, and I like that one. I'm going to go along the same lines of ascension, of a guy continuing to get better. It's the rookie, Jeffrey Simmons. I think he's been good, but you haven't really said his name a whole lot outside for that first game, which is okay. I think he's doing his job. He's making plays. I want to see him over the course of the next 6 games continue to get better,
yeah,
and to continue to be that play wrecker that he can be. And I think with a healthy Jarrell Casey next to him, getting some consistent time with those two on the field at the same time, Daquan Jones as well, you're going to see him continue to get better and better and build that confidence. Again, I like how he's played, but he's somebody that I want to see even take more steps.
One thing I want to see, that sack he got came from where? Lining up at the defensive end position. Mm-hmm. I want to see Dean Pees and that defensive staff take advantage of his versatility up front.
line him up at that outside technique and see what he could do as far as rushing the passer that way. I think that will give them another option, another player for offensive lineman.
Do you think with Jarrell Casey, when Jarrell Casey is in there, that's going to help them do that?
I think it should help them do that. And I think, you know, I could see it. I could see a line in a sub package with Casey, Daquan, Isaiah Mack, and Jeffrey Simmons.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I could see that. I could see a sub package with Casey, Isaiah Mack, and Simmons with Cam Wake or Harold Landry. So, yeah, they could take advantage of it.
So as we wrap this up, again, we alluded to it earlier that there are some big games to watch in regards to the Tennessee Titans, even though they are off. Indianapolis Colts taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars in Indy, a AFC South game. How do you see that one playing out?
Yeah, and Pierre Desir is doubtful too. So DJ Chark should have a good opportunity. Parrish
looks like Jacoby Brissett will play.
Yeah, Parrish Campbell will be out. So I'm going with the Jaguars. I think having
Nick Foles
back, I think that's going to be a great thing for them. And Jacksonville wins that game.
I too have picked Jacksonville, and then the other one, again, the hottest team in the NFL. You know, Lamar Jackson. Everybody's ready to crown him. You know, the MVP. Even
well,
though I think
he is playing outstanding football.
He like, is.
That's not short to me.
No. He is for sure. He is. Russell Wilson should be the MVP, but
Russell Wilson. Yes.
Lamar Jackson is playing out of his mind. 7-2, taking on the Houston Texans. I say Baltimore wins that game.
I agree. Baltimore does win that game with Lamar Jackson. That attack. The Ravens, their offense is as good as it's been in the last decade. So you pair that with the defense, I think, you know, yeah, they'll win that game. And it's no coincidence they're that good with Lamar at quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. He deserves all the praise that he gets, and the team deserves the praise that they're getting. That's going to do it for us. Talking with TD coming up next, though.
Yes,
and again,
yes.
Rate, subscribe, review, search for Talking with TD, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. You get Chase and TD as well. That's going to do it. Chase McCabe, Teron Davenport, Calvin Smith on ESPN 102.5 The Game.